Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to my show. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and this is the place I like to bring topics that I find that others are experiencing and may wish for a frank discussion of tips and solutions to improve and inspire their lives. We have a full range of topics from health and death to dating and cookies. I grew up asking why in all areas of my life, and this is something I still live by today. My guests and I will be talking about a topic in casual conversation so you, the listener, can feel like you are across the table from us with a coffee or tea. I welcome you, the listeners, and I hope to answer some of your questions as I speak with the guests of my day. If you would like to call into the show, I welcome you to dial 424-258-9318 and then push 1 so I can see that you wish to speak on the air. I would also encourage you to follow my show page, and you will know what I will be touching on next and when my next show is. So now it is time to share with you and start the show, and welcome for being with me today. At the beginning of each show, I like to talk about a topic that is of interest to me, that I have found to improve the quality of life, and just something that I started to use. So today I'm sharing about memory. What can we remember about names and places and even what we had for lunch yesterday? Well, I know that's not important to remember what you had for lunch yesterday. It is important to remember that you did have something for lunch, and then that would just be giving you a little more information about your short-term memory. The company is Quincy Bioscience, and the product is called Prevagen Professional. The reason I started taking it was after several stressful life events I've had in the past several years, and I found that I was forgetting things. My kids would be saying things like, "You're not paying attention to me. Why didn't you write it down? You didn't do this for me." And that really got to be a problem. So I started taking one capsule of Prevagen Professional 40 milligrams, but they also have a 10 milligram if you're interested. And my previous use of I Forgot seem to be improving. The product Prevagen, it has a unique ingredient to help with short-term memory and word recall. And that's very important because it does not interact with any other supplements or medications. So if you're saying, "Oh, I'm taking all this other stuff, I'm sure that that's in there." The ingredient that's in Prevagen is not. It is a very specific, unique ingredient. It is not in multiple other types of other supplements or other drugs. It's not something that's very common that's out there. It also has no common allergen, and that's important for me because if you look on the back of most bottles these days, down on the bottom, it always says contains soy or dairy or shellfish or seafood or wheat, and if any of those things is something that you're avoiding, that would be something you need to know. So Prevagen has no common allergen. And research has shown it can reduce brain cell loss up to 50%. I think that is super important, and that's a great margin. But again, you don't wait till you're 50% brain cell lost, and then you're going to decide to take this, and then you're going to be able to be fine. No. The answer is when you're in your 40s and 50s, if you're starting to notice a few things are slipping by you, then it's time to take it. I would encourage you to give them a call and ask them how Prevagen may help you. Their telephone number is 888-895-6463. They have tons of clinical studies and reports about how Prevagen Professional has helped others. You just need to ask them for help. So if you give them a call at that number, 888-895-6463, and tell them that you heard this on the show and you wanted some more information, you didn't know anything about it, you just thought it was interesting, they'll be more than happy to find someone that will be able to talk to you on the phone about your personal needs. So today, my guest is Alan Klein. And you know what? He says that he's a jollytologist. And have you ever heard one of those? I know when I read the information about Alan, I had no clue what it was about, but I was very intrigued. Alan, my guest today, is the world's one and only jollytologist. So that's very important. It's not like you're going to meet one of these, you know, just going down, you know, to your local university or your local healthcare clinic, maybe, or even somebody that you would even say that word to. And who is this? You know, what do they do? He started his work after the death of his wife and needing to move through that loss. But Alan has written many books, including The Healing Power of Humor, and he teaches others how to find humor and peace in trying times. So I'd like to welcome Alan to the show. Alan, welcome and thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Jeanette. I'm so glad to be here.
You know, it's so exciting. When I saw that jollytologist, the name even just lifted me up to say, I don't know what that is, but I sure would love to find out. So I'm so glad you're able.
I made that up.
Yes.
Actually, I made it up, but it actually was kind of a natural process because I studied the therapeutic value of humor for a number of years. I got a master's degree in human, H-U-M-A-N, development, mm-hmm. and my thesis was all about therapeutic humor. And so in Greek, the word gelos, G-E-L-O-S, means laughter. So mm-hmm. I started to call myself a gelotologist, but people thought I'd make that wiggly dessert.
Oh, goodness.
So I changed it to jollytologist, and it kind of gives you a little more clue of what I do, and then it's also intriguing, and people say, well, what does that mean? What do you do? And it's an opening for me to tell them.
You know, it's so interesting to even hear that word and to even think about, I saw therapeutic humor, and I was, what does that really mean? So is this in the medical context or is this in, I didn't have a place to put it. So if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you even got started with this.
Sure. And first let me say for anyone who's interested in getting more humor in their life, no matter what area it is, there's something called the Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor. And
right.
if they look online, it's www.aath.org. And they, you know, you say, what is it and who's interested in this? Well,
right.
they have a conference every year. The next one is in San Diego next April. And they have all, like, I'm going to be speaking about seeing demise through humorous eyes, how comedians, cartoonists, and cinematographers show us that we can lighten up about death and dying situations. But there'll be people maybe talking about their cancer experience and using humor. There'll be clergy talking about how they use humor with their congregation. There's, I know, a number of teachers that talk about using humor in the classroom because students learn better when there's a bit of humor and they remember the information better. There'll be people in the corporate world and a number of associations now, not associated, but corporations
mm-hmm.
are realizing how valuable that is. And, Jeanette, if you just think how many commercials on TV use humor.
Right.
And the reason they do that is because then people laugh, they relax, they feel comfortable, and sometimes they'll remember the product. Like if I say to you, where's the beef? If you remember years ago.
Right, I remember.
See, people remember that.
Right.
And so there'll be nurses, of course, and they also bring in researchers. Like I think next year they have Dr. Lee Burke from Loma Linda University, who has proved that certain secretions happen in the blood system when we're laughing. That's really good for our immune system. So when you say, the reason I went into all of that, I hope it gives you a little inkling of the broad focus of humor, therapeutic humor, and, you know, how it helps people in the job or in their personal life.
You know, when we say humor, though, people have varying differences of opinions on what humor is. You know, it could have take on the good, bad, and the ugly, and everything in between. So how do you even know what to say or what not to say? Like, what is the context of humor? Can you explain
right.
what that might be? Because, you know, people might think and say something and they think it's so humorous or it's funny or whatever, but really it may be offensive to another person when they may just be, you know, projecting their nervousness or something like that.
Right. You are so right. I mean, humor is so powerful. It could bring us up. It could bring us down.
Right.
You know, yes, there's put-down humor. There's all kinds of humor. And everyone's funny bone is in a different place. So how do you know
right.
what's funny to one person, not to the other? What I teach in my keynote speeches and my seminars is to look for the humor for yourself. How can you cope with humor? And part of that means, say you're in the healthcare field and you want to lighten a patient up. Well, you don't go in the room and tell a joke or two because you
right.
don't know what that person's going through. You don't know what they've just been through. You don't know the news that they just heard. You don't know totally, you know, maybe what they're dealing with. And so you go in the room and you listen, you know. And then if something funny comes up, if the patient says something funny, same things if you're a teacher, whatever, you know, profession, look for the humor that's all around us or that's coming from someone else. And then you can jump in. And then look for what is your sense of humor. I mean, some people, I can't believe it, but some people like Don Rickles, who does
mm-hmm.
nothing but put down humor, you know, and I find that very offensive. And I know he's kidding, and I know the celebrities he puts down, they love it. But to me, that's offensive. That's not the kind of humor that I want to nurture in myself or to teach other people. So I think you need to, one is just stop and look and listen. There is humor all around. Give you one example. I was in a laundromat a couple of months ago, and I looked on the wall, and it said, when the machine stops, remove all your clothing.
Right.
Which I did. You know, and there's that kind of, if nothing else, those kind of funny things around us, just the signs, and then, or something funny. Someone will say something like at a funeral, they'll look in the coffin and go, oh, she never looked so good, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it's kind of humorous, you know. And so we cry at a funeral and then we laugh because some absurd things happen. And humor is full of, the reason we laugh sometimes, it's so absurd and we're unexpected that in the most unusual situations we laugh. And then talking about, now you got me started but talking about, you know, in nurses,
mm-hmm.
ambulance drivers, policemen, there's a very dark humor sometimes they use because they see such grim things. Sometimes it's the only way they can cope and get a perspective. And what I teach is that humor always, if we can find something funny in a serious situation, we get a different perspective of it. We see the situation differently. Doesn't solve. I'm not talking about solving or healing
right.
so much, but we get to see it differently. We rise above it. We get control over it in some small way by joking about that difficult situation.
You know, I can remember recently when I was helping a woman and she was not doing well, and she was approaching time where it was, you know, her time on this earth was very short. And anyway, when we came out of her doctor's appointment, she was in the on her scooter, and she needed to use the restroom. And I was with her driver, and it was he and I. We were standing outside the restroom door with the scooter. And she was taking a long time, and I can remember saying to her, you know what, you're not going to die in there, so would you please hurry up because we're not coming in to get you. And she would be laughing in there and everything, and she thought it was funny. And then she got on her scooter, and we were walking in front of her, and we both have, it was a man, another man and myself, and we both have really big behinds. So anyway, we're walking down the thing, and she was behind us, and she was buzzing us with the scooter. And mm-hmm. we were walking faster and faster. I says, we just felt like we were like ducks with our butts waddling, you know, left to right in front of her,
uh-huh.
trying to get
uh-huh.
away from her. And I said, well, we really should just hook feathers with those little weed clips, you know, on our butts, so we'd be like a duck.
Uh-huh.
And, do you know, she thought that was so funny. And within, I guess it was like about 2 months when we had her memorial, the other gentleman and I were talking about how funny it was that she was buzzing us and we were like ducks with the feathers waddling. And, you know, it was just something so light, but it just brought that. That's our connection now with her, you know. And then
don't you know,
within a month, I was swimming in a swimming pool and a bird feather flew up on my hand.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so interesting. I said, okay, good, we got it, you know. We'll just remember you by feathers. And it was so light
great.
And just something so simple, you know. And
that
you wonder
great.
how can you connect those things with other people, you know. I think, you know, what you take from listening
personal.
To them.
Yeah, it's
mm-hmm.
very personal to you. It doesn't mean much to other people, although it's a wonderful
right.
story and certainly moved me. But, you know, and those things happen to a lot of us. These, and I call them mini miracles
mm-hmm.
and also signs that the deceased, you know, I don't know if you want to say they send messages, but there are things
right.
that happen that remind us of those people. And I think, you know, my belief is that God gave us a sense of humor to get over some of those difficult things. And those lighthearted moments help us do that.
And also, like you said about the sign, so maybe I might have just seen a sign that said something about feathers, and that would have been something to connect, you know. So
right. Right.
That's the way you do get the humor through in the same connection.
Right. You know, you asked me a question probably 15 minutes ago, and I'm not sure I answered it, is how I got into this.
Right.
Being the world's only jollytologist, somehow I went off on I actually wanted to set the scene for a it was part of therapeutic humor, and so I wanted to set that, you know, get that a little clear first. And by the way, We say humor and laughter kind of in the same sentence,
mm-hmm.
But they're kind of different. At least you'll get all kinds of explanations about the difference. But in my view, humor is finding something funny about something. And then the laughter is the physical result of finding that thing funny. So they're really two different things, but we often connect them, which makes sense. So how did I get into being the world's only jollytologist?
Right.
It started over 30 years ago. My wife went to the doctor just for a physical checkup, and he did some tests, and the doctor called back a couple of days later and said, Ellen, we need to put you in the hospital. The tests don't look good, and I'm not sure. Something's wrong with your liver. And they put her in the hospital, and things just went downhill for 3 years. She had a rare liver disease, primary biliary cirrhosis, where the bile ducts get clogged up. And
mm-hmm.
there was no liver transplants at the time. There was no hospice at the time. And it was a very difficult 3 years. And indeed, Ellen did pass away 3 years after the diagnosis. And we had a 10-year-old daughter at the time. And it was a very difficult time for me. But as I went through the grieving process, I realized what a great sense of humor she had. Give you one example. She was in the hospital with a copy of Playgirl magazine with a male nude centerfold. And she said, Alan, I really like this hunky man this month. Can you put the fold out on the wall by the bed over there? And I said, Ellen, this is a hospital. A little risque for that.
Mm.
And she said, well, maybe you're right. She said, why don't you get a leaf from the plant and cover up, you know, that part?
Oh, goodness.
And I did that, and things are fine for the first day, fine for the second day, but by the third day, the leaves start shriveling up.
Oh, goodness.
And Jeanette, we came home from the hospital, and we would just look at a leaf or a plant, and we would start to laugh.
That's something.
And I
huh?
realized looking back, it wasn't a lot of laughter. It was maybe 5 or 10 seconds every now and then.
Right.
You know, but I also realized just for those couple of moments, it helped us rise above the situation, gave us a reprieve for what we were going through, and actually gave us the perspective that I talked about a little while ago that humor always gives us. So after Ellen died, I went back to, I gave up a business I had, went back to school, learned about therapeutic humor. It was the time Norman Cousins was talking about how he healed himself from humor, with humor, of a rare disease. And so I just went back to school, got a master's degree in human, H-U-M-A-N, development, and my thesis became my first book, which is The Healing Power of Humor. And then when the book came out, people would say, you know, oh, Alan, can you come and talk to us about therapeutic humor? Mostly nurses groups. You know, we'll give you lunch.
Right. Yeah.
And then it just, it started, you know, his message got all over the world, and somehow my topic was a hot topic, and just happened to be in the right place at the right time, talking about the right thing, and it mushroomed, and that book led to The Coach Laugh, another book about humor in death and dying situations, and then a series of motivational, uplifting quotation books. So I now have 18 books, and they've sold over 500,000 copies. So, you know, I look back and I go, I didn't want my wife to die. You know, I didn't want this to happen to me. It did, and who knows where I would be today if that didn't happen. I also think, look at what is done to the people in the world, and I get so many letters. I can share some of those, how it's helped them with their life, how it's changed their life.
Well, I think that actually, in a way, her death might have been an end to the physical part, but also it came out and she gave so much more through you to so many others.
Right.
You know,
and
that was a circle that you felt.
Sound, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm in California, so this may sound a little woo-woo to some of your listeners, but I believe she is in every single workshop that I give.
Right.
And when I first gave a workshop on humor, it was a 3-hour workshop, and I looked up right before the break, and I hadn't seen this person in the room before, but there looked a woman just like my wife sitting way in the corner.
Wow.
And I, like, you know, I got the chills. I kind of stopped speaking for a moment. The audience didn't know what was going on, and I pulled myself together and went on with the program because I knew the break was coming shortly, and at the break, I went to talk to that woman, and someone tapped me on the shoulder, and I turned around to talk to them for a moment. And when I turned back, that woman was gone, and she never came back after the break.
Oh, wow.
Was that my wife? Was that my imagination?
Right.
I have no idea. What I took it as is that whatever it was, even if it was a real person that looked like my wife, that was a sign to me, because I truly believe in signs, that was a sign that I'm doing the right work and to keep doing it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I almost failed speech in college. I think I got a D or a D minus. I hated speaking, getting up in a group and speaking.
Right.
I mean, it was awful. And now I have spoken to audiences as big as 1,500 people in one room. So I feel it's, you know, whatever I say is coming through a higher power, whatever that is, and that my wife was kind of a channel for that to happen.
You know, it's funny you said that about the speaking part. I can remember myself speaking in front of people was just absolutely, there was just no way. So what I eventually found that I did when I was speaking about natural medicine to people is that I sat down in a room right next to them and standing up in front of them. And I found that, you know, being in the midst of them you could feel more and, you know, be more with them instead of being at them. And,
right.
You know, and then they would open up more, just like you said, you know, with humor or with discussion or being frank about different things. So I think it's how we approach it also, or how we connect with them. Humor is not something you're speaking at them. Humor is you're connecting
right.
with them.
I always go in the audience. It's a little hard. I mean, I could not do it when we had 1,500 people. But I always go right in the audience. It's almost like the Donahue Show.
Right.
You know, I have
yeah.
a mic and we have a yeah. little conversation because that's how I'm most comfortable. You're right. I just don't like being like up on stage and not being able to physically connect with an audience. But sometimes I have to do that, forced to do that.
Right.
But mostly I don't.
But your
and
humor
the other
connects
thing that,
you with the people, right? I mean, the
oh,
humor
definitely.
Is that
yeah.
connection.
And,
you're
yeah.
not just dishing out something and hope that it's going to fling and hit the wall, you know? You're really
right.
looking
and,
to connect with where they are.
Yeah, and I do a lot of interaction with people. So often people think I'm very funny after a program, but a lot of it is because the funny stuff they said, you know, they give
right.
me credit for it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's things that I draw out from them, of course, too, and the comfort with me doing this kind of work. You know, the other thing, when I was first doing this, two things got me through the nervousness, and I still get nervous at times, not all the time, but one is I realized Barbra Streisand would not do a live concert for 20 years because she was so nervous to perform in
right.
front of an audience.
Right.
And I thought, if Barbra Streisand can do it... You know, be nervous.
Yeah.
Alan Klein could be nervous.
That's
and the
true.
Other thing I realize is to focus on my material, not on myself.
Mm-hmm.
So that those two things helped me. One other little thing, I remember seeing Lily Tomlin, the comedian, do a routine. She was preparing her show for Broadway, and she was actually reading some of her material from a notebook. And at one point, she just stopped in the middle of this, like, five-minute skit and just said, I don't like the way this is coming out. I'm going to start over.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, if she can be that comfortable, you know, Lily
right.
Tomlin,
right.
I could do stuff like that, too. And just because the audience really loves you. They want you to succeed is really the bottom line. They don't want you to fail. And so, you know, I take anything that happens in the audience or with my speeches or whatever and run with it and acknowledge it and, you know, get the audience involved in whatever's happening.
So can you share with us a little bit of how you might approach with hospice or long-term care when you are visiting these areas or working with these people or the nurses that work with there? How do you even approach that? Or what would be an example of some humor or an area in which you would not bring humor?
Right. Well, first of all, Jeanette, let me say this is a little secret that I'm going to give you and your listeners. I've been doing this over 20 years, and I basically have one speech. Because I once heard another speaker say, it's much easier to get a new audience than a new speech.
Okay.
How true, you know, because, yeah. you know, I get paid for my expertise and for... you know, the laughter and the enjoyment and stuff. And so a lot of my material is tested.
Mm-hmm.
And with a new speech, you know, you can't do that. Now, on Friday, I did a 2.5-hour workshop with the hospice, and I put in maybe 5 minutes of new material just to see. And now I know that maybe 3.5 minutes of that works, and 1.5 minutes doesn't, but I can now take that out. But it was just a little part of those 2.5 hours. So what do I tell hospice or medical audiences? So I have one speech, and I go over the letters L-A-U-G-H.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether it's a 20-minute program or a 6-hour program, I use the same letters and then I feed in other things. So let me just go over those five letters because I think it'll give you a little hint of because basically, you know, whether you're working in hospice or whether you're working in corporate world, everyone has stress these days.
Right.
You know, everyone doesn't have enough time or has to do more with less. Or, you know, hospice people maybe have that and they deal with people who are dying and difficult families. So, you know, I do a pre-programmed questionnaire and I get a little more information about those people, and certainly I've done so many hospice programs that I don't even need that questionnaire. But L-A-U-G-H, L is for let go. Because if we are angry, if we're upset, if we're frustrated about anything, we can't laugh about it. So
right.
The first notion of getting more laughter into your life in any situation is to start to let go of that stress. So I have various very playful ways, because I think I have to visually show people how to let go, because instinctively we don't know how to do that. So I can do something with you right now, Jeanette. Give me one little thing that stresses you out in your work.
In my work?
Little thing.
When they aren't willing to trust.
Okay, when your clients aren't willing to trust.
Correct.
And how does that make you feel when you have a client that's, you know, come to you for help.
Right.
But not, doesn't want to trust what you're saying. How does that make you feel?
I guess I kind of feel sad and frustrated because not only might they not trust me, but they don't trust themselves.
Okay. So you said one word you just said was frustrated. So if you would just tell us, you know, I get frustrated when I have a client that doesn't trust. So you're going to say that's me, and then say that statement, but right after it, you're going to say either ha-ha, ho-ho, or hee-hee.
Okay. I get frustrated when I get a client that doesn't trust. Ha-ha.
I can't see you, but are you smiling at least?
It's interesting, yes.
Yeah. You can't, like, you know, you're playing with this. You can't not smile when you're playing with the situation. So that's a little technique I do. I give out balloons so they blow their stress into the balloon and then they release it at a certain point. You know, you can get 500 balloons going around the room. It's very amusing and funny. I talk about how some people got their own stress, came back again and hit them, or the neighbor's balloon, you know, their stress got hit by the neighbor.
Right.
So I'm trying to make a point of using play or humor to let go. So that's the first notion. Second thing is let go. A is attitude. You know, the world is the way we are. We get stuck in traffic jams, stuff like that. It's how we relate to it. It's not the situation so much. You know, when I talk about Viktor Frankl, who changed his attitude in the concentration camp and found some humor, I talk about various people that I know that have used humor. You know, one is paraplegic, one is blind, how they use humor to help them get through the world. There's a whole group of disabled comedians that go in nightclubs and do stand-up about their disability. They change their attitude. So I have those kind of examples.
Mm-hmm.
Then the U, I kind of cheated, is for Y-O-U, and I give examples of how people at work have used humor, like with just very simple things, funny post-it notes, you know, baby pictures on a bulletin board, and people try to decide who that is. You know, things that they can bring to work and use to lighten up the day. And then the G is to go do it. And I talk about the healing power of humor, where I have 14 techniques.
Mm-hmm.
How to increase your sense of humor. I give out red clown noses, and I do it in the process with their eyes are closed, and they think of some difficulty, and then they open this package. They didn't know what's inside and put the nose on. They look around the room. They start laughing, you know.
Yeah.
And they take that with them, and I invite them to use it in traffic jams or business meetings. And I get letters back or emails back about how I used it with my kid to stop fighting or my husband to stop fighting or use it at the board meeting when things are stuck, so things like that. And then another technique is to exaggerate, to take anything and exaggerate. And then finally, H is for humor, eyes and ears, to open your eyes and ears and look for humor because it's all around us, and I have several examples.
You know, there's I can think of an instance just recently where someone had said, oh, I'm so worried about this. And it was something that was going to come up like in a few days. And I said, so you're going to worry about this for the next few days? And they said, yes. I said, well, what if you chose not to worry about it for the next few days? Wouldn't you have a whole lot of free time? You know? And I said, what do you think you could fill that free time with? And they just looked at me like I had 10 eyes. Not even 4 eyes. I had 10 eyes. They just did not get it, you know?
Right, right.
They still chose to keep that holding on. And it was like, I'm so sorry for for your loss, you know, that you're going to hold on to that.
People hold on to stuff. I saw such a physical example of this. I was traveling. The plane was 3 hours late. You know, everyone was annoyed. And I got on the plane, and you know how the flight attendant stands there and greets people as they get on?
Right.
I was one of the first people on, and I went to her and I said, you know, here's a clown nose. If you feel comfortable, maybe you want to put it on and see how people react as they get on to try to lighten them up. And I stood next to her, and I just noticed how some people, like, would look at her and all their stress just, you know, they would smile and chuckle and go to their seats. Other people would see it and instantly look away, and what I was getting, what I was reading in them is like, I'm upset and you can't change me. You know, you can't change this. I'm going to hang on to that. And so you're so right. It's how people, even when you give them opportunities to change, to lighten up, they won't do it. And you know, my father, I'm a very positive person, and my quotation books, the one that just came out, particularly The Art of Living Joyfully, it's 500 quotes to motivate, inspire and stuff and lift people up, because I truly believe the words we use are so important. And so my father was, they lived in New York and they were coming to the West Coast to visit me, and they took the train because my father was afraid of flying, and luggage was going to be transferred. They had to take a different train to Chicago and then a different one to San Francisco. And for a month, he complained that they're going to lose his luggage in Chicago. Jeanette, what do you think happened? They lost its luggage in Chicago. It's like, why do we, like, set this scene up for ourselves? It's crazy. So for a month, he was worrying, and then it actually happened. So a month, he could, like you, with your client, they could have been happy that whole time. They could have been uplifted and positive.
It definitely makes a difference, I think, in where you place your emphasis.
Oh, yeah. You know, and I've worked with people that seriously ill, and they choose to lighten up. You know, yes, I'm going through this, and I can still enjoy. You know, I'm still alive. I'm still here. I still can enjoy stuff.
Could you give us your website information and the names of your books and where they can be purchased?
Sure. Well, you don't want all 18 books. But on the website, they can see them there. Some are out of print now. So my website is www.allen, A, you got to spell it right, A-L-L-E-N, allenkleein.com. That's allenkleein.com. So my books are there. There's, if they press on the article link, there's tons of articles about humor, my recommended books by other authors, stuff like that, a little more about what I do. So my books, the first book was The Healing Power of Humor, which I talked about how that came about after my wife died. And that has 14 techniques of how to increase your sense of humor. Second book, I took that a little further and I interviewed and researched about 100 people, people with cancer, AIDS, lingering loss, sudden loss. And I asked them if they found any humor in the process and if it helped. And about 98 out of 100 said yes, and I documented that in the next book, which is The Courage to Laugh, and the subtitle is Humor, Hope, and Healing in the Face of Death and Dying. And then one thing I realized, Jeanette, is when my wife died, when a very close cousin who was like a sister to me died a couple of years ago, I started to look at grief books, and they were big, heavy books about, you know, the grief process and how long it might take and how terrible I might feel. And I thought, I just lost someone. I want to be lifted up. I don't want to hear all this.
Right.
And
right.
So I wrote another book that's called Learning to Laugh When You Feel Like Crying. And it has 5 simple stages of going from loss to laughter, losing, letting go again. Losing, learning, because I think loss can be a great teacher for us. Losing, learning, letting go, living again, and finally laughing. And so they're very short little ideas and quotations of how people can help them get through the day after a loss. Learning to laugh when you feel like crying. And then, as I said, I've done a number of uplifting motivational quotation books, and the latest one is The Art of Living Joyfully, How to Be Happier Every Day of the Year. And, you know, I thought when I, because at one time I was contracted to Random House to write 7 of these quotation books.
Mm-hmm.
And after, like, the third one, I was getting, Alan wanted to write a real book, like, The Healing Power of Humor. And then I start getting letters how these quotation books helped people. One woman said she was raped violently when she was a youngster. She hadn't told anyone about it for 55 years. And she found a quote in one of the books, and she said, that helped me take back my power to forgive the person that did this horrible thing to me and to get on with my life. Just one, from one little quote in that book. So words are so important.
You know, and as you say about words, it's really important, too, that when someone passes away, that you don't get so wrapped up in yourself and your grief that you also lose your life, too, while you're still living.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that, because I believe that, because I used to be a hospice volunteer, and I work with a woman mm-hmm. whose mother died, and for 2 years she could not get on with her life. And what I saw was that 2 lives were lost.
Right.
The mother's life, physically, and the daughter's life, who was just like stagnant and not enjoying life anymore. So you're totally right. 2 lives are often lost. And I'm not saying we shouldn't grieve. That's important. But at some point, we need to get on with our life.
Grief can also show you a little bit more about yourself, about how strong you might be, or maybe what you might not be paying attention to also in life.
Oh, again, you're so right. I mean, after my wife died, you know, I went through the typical, you know, why me? Why is this happening to me? You know, I didn't sign up for this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when I started to speak about humor because of her great sense of humor during those difficult years. And, you know, I was afraid to get up and speak, and so it showed me that part of myself, that I can come out and do that I can help people that way. I was in New York City. She was in California, so she knew how to drive. I never had a car. And every day I'd look at the car in the driveway and I go, I have several choices. I could either let it sit and rust or I can learn to drive. So I learned to drive, and I'm changing phones because the other one's losing its battery.
Okay.
So I learned to drive, and it wasn't until later I realized I could not be speaking all over the country as I had been doing if I did
right.
not learn to drive. So, yeah,
so
it shows
really
us all
mm-hmm.
kinds of – that's why I think loss is a gift. I mean, most people don't see it that way, but it truly is a gift to help us be stronger, to maybe learn to be more spiritual maybe. I mean, all kinds of things. I mean, a lot of my wife's friends, because as I said, she was 31 when we found out about the illness – they changed their lifestyle. They stopped smoking. You know, they ate more healthy foods. Because they realized that we never know, you know, when we're going to go. And so, and to do stuff, if you want to do it, to do it. My daughter and I, right after my wife died, we took a trip to Alaska. And
mm-hmm.
it's one of the best things we could have done because it was so adventurous, seaplane rides, whitewater rafting, you know.
Right.
And it helped us connect and bond and talk about mommy and the loss. And it was just so incredible. I would have probably never done that, you know. I'd be too afraid to do that before.
Well, you know, my daughter recently, she's in her last year of pre-med school, and she said, you know what, I think I'm going to go to Italy for the summer. So she did by herself for 2 months. And then
uh-huh.
she came back, and she's a senior now, and I said, well, don't you have a lot of schoolwork? And she said, yeah. She said, but I'm going skydiving next week. And then she came back from that, and she said, I'm going to go on a cruise in 2 weeks. And then she came back
wow.
from that, and then she said, I'm going to go to a football game in Pittsburgh. And it's like,
wow.
And then I asked her, I said, well, how can you be doing all this and maintaining your grades? She says, grades aren't everything, and, you know, my life is everything, so I'm going to go enjoy
right.
it. And she does.
She's
and every
very
day.
Wise.
Mm-hmm.
Very wise. It's
every
like
day.
I'm a Broadway musical fan, particularly of Stephen Sondheim. And just a couple of months ago, there was a big show of his in Los Angeles. I live in San Francisco. And I bought a ticket, and I thought, well, I can go down there overnight, and I could see the show, you know, because it wasn't coming
right.
here.
Right.
Why not?
Yeah.
The other thing about being positive, this is because Thanksgiving's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
I used to work for Captain Kangaroo, and every Thanksgiving I would have to be in the studio at 6 a.m. because he would be the MC for the parade, Macy Day Parade.
Right.
And so I kind of always miss Thanksgiving, or at least part of the day. And I was watching the parade last year on TV, and I thought, I would like to be in the parade. I would love to ride on a float. But I didn't know how to approach anyone, so I put it on Facebook.
Okay.
And a friend of mine in New York, a colleague, said, I'm going to find out how you do that. And do you know I got an invitation to march in the parade this year?
Oh, no way.
But I actually turned it down because they wanted me to march and be an eight ball. The costume looked like a big eight ball. And I said, my real preference is to ride on a float because I know the weather could be brutal and I don't want to march and stuff and all that. And so he said, okay, call me in May when we're planning, and I'll get you on a float for next year. So
no way.
I truly believe, you know, we need to have that bucket list and start checking those things off.
That sounds absolutely wonderful. Well, you know, we're coming to the end of the show. Could you give us a few of your, maybe one or two of your very good tips and notes and sayings out of your book?
Sure. Well, you know how I like to, I have so many books that, but One of the things in the Healing Power of Humor is I like this 14 techniques. I like to talk about people having a prop. I have a photo of my daughter with a pie being thrown in her face when she was a teenager, because that's what she wanted at the time. And I just look at that photo and it lifts me up. So have things, reminders around. I like having a feather around. It reminds me to keep things light. I think you talked about the feather before.
Right, yes.
I have a picture of like 100 clown noses on my wall. I mean,
wow,
I have toys on my shelf. I have Teletubbies. I like Teletubbies. Find out stuff that you like, you know, and have that or surround yourself. Because, Jeanette, we're surrounded with terrible news sometimes,
yes.
Every single day. I mean, I don't put the news on anymore because of that. So you've got to counteract that. You've got to have things around to lighten up. So that would be one tip. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, is there something that I know out of one of your books? If you could maybe just tell us, if I'm a woman and maybe I'm just, you know, not even knowing where to go these days, how would she finds one of those little gratitude tips that you have in your books? Is there something that you can look, you know, in other words, I'm always the type where I'll go out every single night and I'll look to see the stars and the moon, something I always do.
Uh-huh. Great.
You know? But to me, that was gratitude. But how do you get someone to actually appreciate that, you know, in the time of their life when they really need it?
Yeah. Well, you know, I, as healers, I consider myself a healer, I'm sure you do.
Right.
You can't force people, so you make suggestions. So, you know, I've just opened my latest book, The Art of Living Joyfully, because it has so many uplifting quote, and I'll just pick a quote here and read it.
Yes, that would be great.
Yeah. George Santayana said, "There is no cure for birth or death, save to enjoy the interval."
Wonderful.
You know, so there's just a wonderful little quote. And some of them I'm looking for more like, there's funny ones in here like, Kevin Costner, the actor, said, "Life's better when it's fun." Boy, that's deep, isn't it?
Right.
So some are a little, more uplifting and light, and some are a little heavier. Dr. Bernie Siegel said, "If God came in and said, 'I want you to be happy for the rest of your life,' what would you do?"
Mm-hmm. Yes. What would you do?
What would you do?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, who said life is supposed to be miserable?
Right. And I always think about how much do you carry on your back, you know? And when people come to me, they're like, "Oh, I'm getting older, you know, my back is rolling over, or my back has really been bothering me." And I'll just turn around and say, "Aren't you tired of carrying that luggage? Can't you kick it to the curb?" And they look at you like, you know, "I don't get what you're saying," you know?
Here's Anonymous, who's a very prolific writer, wrote, "It's never too late to have a happy childhood."
Yes.
So true. So true. I was a very serious child, and now, you know, somehow I've learned to lighten up about that.
Yeah.
Because I'm here to enjoy life.
That is the truth. Well, Alan, we're at the end of the show. Could you please give us your websites and how to purchase
very
your
simple
books?
It's my name, which is Alan, you know, Alan, A-L-L-E-N, KLEIN.com. And my books are The Healing Power of Humor, The Courage to Laugh, Learning to Laugh When You Feel Like Crying, and the latest one, The Art of Living Joyfully.
It's absolutely wonderful to have you with us today. And, you know, I hope that everybody can take something from what you're saying. You know, like we have said, you know, how are you going to spend the next 2-3 hours being aggravated or just being lighter, don't you think?
Right. We have that choice. We all, in every situation, we have a choice.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being with me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I had a great time.
Thank you. Well, if anybody would like to know more information about Alan, on the show description on Blog Talk Radio for today's show, there are his links. You're able to click directly through those, directly to his sites. If you'd like more information, please feel free to send him a contact us on his page, and you can ask him his question there. Also, he does a lot of teaching directly to healthcare providers. If you're a healthcare provider and you're listening to this show, you'll be able to send him an email on that website and see how maybe Alan could come and speak to your group. Thank you so much for being with us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and hope to see you tomorrow. Thank you.